7175, room 3.
Sir Alexander Stanier, Reel 3. I think you were telling me that you took advantage of a lull in the fighting when you were before the Hindenburg line.
That is so. It was a lovely hot summer's afternoon in August, and I'd been up all night and all over the place, and all was quiet, so I, finding a nice foxhole or small trench, I lay down in it and went fast asleep. Suddenly I woke up feeling that somebody was looking down on me, and I looked up to see three or four generals looking down on me saying, "Good God, fancy a young man being able to sleep through when sleep like that when a whole army corps of heavy artillery is fired over his head." So I felt the generals were human after all.
Can I ask you some questions about fatigue and its effects? About sleeplessness and fatigue. When you went to sleep in your foxhole with the corps artillery going overhead, how long had you been without sleep before that?
When you snatched it, of course, it's awfully difficult to say. We got a lot of sleep, really, but fitfully. We were so short in the front line at one time, there were only two officers in the company, that although I was in the actual front trench, as long as I had my servant with me with the SOS rocket by my side, I was allowed to leave my platoon sergeant in charge, and I was allowed to go to sleep, but only for short periods. I remember the commanding officer poking me and saying, "You've had enough sleep, wake up, come on, get on with it." But usually you took it in turns and went back during the night. But you got used to very little sleep.
What was the sort of essential minimum which you had to have, personally, you know, to keep going and keep your head clear?
Well, I'm a person who's frightfully bad at getting up in the morning and always want to go to bed fairly early. I want a lot of sleep. Some people can sleep with very little, but I want 6 hours sleep, at least. But I didn't always get it. But then I can sleep anywhere, at any time. I mean, now if you said stop, I could lie back and go to sleep.
Did you find that lack of sleep made you bad-tempered?
Certainly other people, so I suppose it made me, yes. Irritable, rather bad-tempered.
How long did this artillery preparation go on before you were able to advance on the Hindenburg line?
Oh, I should think 2 or 3 days. Certainly, yeah.
And where were you actually when it was going on? How far from the German line were your own troops?
Oh, 1,000 yards, no more.
And were you in trenches, or were you in...
In trenches, masses of them. So many that you didn't know where you were, because each side had dug more trenches, each division always had a new idea and so on. In fact, I lost myself in the trenches there.
These were old trenches, were they?
They were old trenches, yes, that had been fought over in the Battle of Cambrai in 1916, then fought again in 17, then the advance in 18 by the Germans had run over them and so on.
But were they comfortable as far as...
Well, they were soon... They were there, so it didn't take long to dig them out and get them serviceable. And luckily it was August, and so it wasn't raining very much. It did rain, but not the appalling stuff of the winter.
How was it that you got lost then? Were you sent off on a...
Yes, I was told we were the right hand company of the battalion, and I was told to get in touch with the next division, the troops of certainly of another division. And I was wandering along, completely lost, along some trenches, when I came across an enormous man who I found was a brigadier, who said to me, what are you doing? And I said, I'm looking for so-and-so. And he said, you'll never find them if you walk in a ditch. Get up on the top. It's quite quiet, and there's no need to walk in a trench. So whereupon he got up as well, with his brigade major and I, and we walked along the top. But, of course, we immediately attracted fire, and down came a shell quite close. And his brigade major was hit in the foot. And I left the brigadier to take him back to his headquarters. He happened to be Field Marshal, later Field Marshal Lord Ironside, who I got to know and used to comment to me about it.
Did you actually manage to find your flanking?
Yes, I think I did. Yes, due to him. Yes, I did, because of that.
So
because
his
I got
method
up
was
on the
effective
top.
If dangerous.
Yeah. I was all for caution.
It sounds as though the Germans were still fighting back quite hard, even although they had all this artillery raining down on top of them.
Oh, yes, they were marvellous at what they stuck. I mean, they went through hell.
But they were replying in kind.
Yes, but I think they were getting it worse than we were, but we thought it was bad enough. And consequence was, when the attack went in, we were fairly lucky where we were compared to the Grenadiers, who took it and had a hell of a fight on the left. I don't know what the other people were like, because it was such a small area one was able to see.
But in your personal experience of this attack, you had to advance, you said something like 1,000 yards.
To the German line.
To the German line. And then presumably fight your way through their entrenchments.
Yeah. Actually, when he got up to it, as far as they surrendered, I think, in most places. We took quite a lot of prisoners, I remember. And the others must have run away.
Do you think they'd been driven out of their positions and forced to surrender by the artillery, or was it because you were advancing on them?
Oh, I think it was the artillery had completely given them such a shock that when we advanced, they'd had enough.
What time of day did this advance take place? Was it an early morning effort?
Fairly early, yes.
And how was it conducted? What sort of formation did you use?
Oh, again, this artillery formation to start off with, and then getting into smaller blobs all the time, and then rushing forward.
In a line of blobs?
Blocks, yeah.
But the enemy on your front didn't show any sign of fight?
Oh, he showed signs of fight, but he didn't stand there till the last. I never saw a man bayoneted that day. I don't say that's all that, but he surrendered by the time when we got really close to him.
What happened to the prisoners that you took?
We just herded them together in some hollow or trench, and as soon as possible, four men took back about 100 men. I mean, they were quite. They threw down their arms, or if they had them, we told them to, and they just walked back. I never saw any of them being tiresome.
Did you get the impression that they were completely demoralised by that stage?
No, they were still... Well, they were when they were prisoners, perhaps they looked dejected, but they were fighting all right, and they went on fighting for another month.
What was their physical condition like? Did they look as though they were in reasonable health?
They looked thin, but they were all right. Who knows?
How deep was their position? How many lines of trenches did you have to actually clear through?
Oh, rows of them. But of course, they weren't all occupied. That's so difficult to say. But there were so many trenches, you never knew they. You'd advance a few, every 100 yards you found somebody holding on to something.
Was it a continuous line?
There were continuous lines and then communication trenches. So what they did was, when you captured one, they ran down the communication trench and took up the next position until they were exhausted or you were.
Did you suffer many casualties on this attack in your own platoon?
Not the... not bad. I mean, there must have been casualties. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, quite a few. Oh, yes, Corporal... I remember a corporal being hit and... Oh, yes.
What were your casualties lost to in the main? Were they lost to shell fire or to...
Shell fire and mortar. Shell and mortar fire. The bullets seemed to be the thing, but I think it was the shells and mortars that really took you. You could hide from the bullets. They went over your head if you didn't get you the first time, you were hidden by the next one.
What stage did the bombardment in support of you stop when you went into the attack?
Oh, very close. I mean, we came very close up to it. It was what they call a creeping barrage. And it came down only about 100 yards in front of us.
So you would be having to pace your advance to keep 100 yards behind the bursting shells. And did the bombardment then lift off the front trench when you were about 100 yards away?
That's right.
Did you have any means of communicating with the artillery who was supporting you?
Only through the OP.
So it was a question of their OP being able to see you.
That's right.
And tell them to up the range a bit.
Yes.
How did the German trenches compare with British trenches? Were there any significant differences in the construction or layout of the entrenchments?
No. But the Germans were very neat in a lot of things they did. This dugout rabbit hole that I jumped into at St. Ledger was most beautifully constructed inside. It was tiny, but it was very neat. And it actually, there was a German jacket in it. I cut the shoulder tabs off for information, and I've got them still, and it's a pick and shovel on it. So obviously he was a pioneer of some kind.
When you got to the German line, the Hindenburg line, was that heavily wired?
Oh, tremendous, yes. But the artillery knocked that out. I mean, they made the holes in it.
So your friendly artillery had flattened it all?
Well, cut holes for it, yes. They didn't knock it completely down, but they made it so that you could get through.
When you're actually in an advance, how did you control your own men in your platoon? What method did you use to convey orders, for instance?
Entirely by voice, and therefore you had to have them close round you, and it was no good having them strung out, and that's why you had these little blobs so that you could shout, "Corporal Snooks, don't go so fast, come back."
Did you ever use a whistle or signalling flags or any other message?
Whistle I did to attract their attention, and then I'd shout. But I don't think I ever had any two shorts and a long blast or anything like that particularly.
What about hand signs, things like that? Were they of any use?
Don't remember them at all, and I don't think we'd have used flags particularly, although after the war I was signal officer to the battalion, and I learnt all my Morse code by signal flag, and we went on doing flags for quite a long time. Telephones were the great thing.
Was the battlefield very noisy?
Terrible noise, yes. But you just had to put up with it and have a loud voice.
When you were doing an attack on an enemy position, did you control all the fire yourself rigidly, or were there standard procedures which your corporals and other NCOs could follow in regard to such matters as opening fire on targets of opportunity?
You controlled it as far as possible, but I think you lost control in the noise of battle and the composition of the thing. If you were telling one gunner, this gunner up there, to fire in that direction, you couldn't be telling this one to fire in the other direction, because you couldn't be in two places at once. But so he would then do it on his own initiative. But you controlled as much as possible, and the platoon sergeants were very good.
So you were able to give specific fire orders?
Oh, yes.
And bring down fire upon quite specific targets?
I'm saying yes now, as if it was just easy. It wasn't very easy. But you didn't lose control completely, but there was an awful lot of decentralisation of it.
When you're actually clearing trenches, did you make very much use of grenades and bombs?
Yes, very much. Tremendous lot of bombing. You were very inclined to come to a corner. You weren't sure if the Germans were on the other side. You just lobbed a bomb over just to make sure that there wasn't anybody there.
What about dugouts?
Threw bombs down them always, whenever you captured a place. You were very free with throwing them down, just in case there was somebody down there.
Did you have men specifically trained for bombing?
Yes. And also, to go back to the dugouts, because we as British Army weren't allowed to make dugouts very much, because we were frightened that our men would go down and we wouldn't get them up in time to hold off the attack. The Germans did it the other way around.
Do you think that they lost a lot of men trapped in dugouts who were not quick enough?
I think they did. On the other hand, we lost a lot of men by not putting them into dugouts.
When you were training a man for, you know, as a bomber, what sort of thing did you teach him to do? What sort of skills did a good bomber have to have?
Well, first of all, he must learn to do the right drill of pulling out the pin and all that sort of thing. And then he must know that he's really got to throw it properly. Otherwise, he drops it down in front of him, he blows himself off. I mean, it's no good just flicking it like that. You've got to have a real good overarm bowling. And of course, those who could throw it a long way or accurately were very good people.
So he had to have the skills of a cricketer.
That's right.
Did you occupy the Hindenburg line for any length of time?
No. We captured the Hindenburg line about the 21st of September, and we were out in the open by the beginning of October.
So the Hindenburg line was the last really solid position you had to get through.
Yeah. But while he was escaping from the Hindenburg line, he fortified all the villages he could, although they weren't ready for fortifying. The civilians were still in them.
So you're in the Hindenburg line for a few days, presumably getting yourself reorganised and sorted out, right. And then the advance has resumed. Mm-hmm. And I think then you were saying that you took part in a fight around a village called St. Vast.
Yes. Well, from there, we advanced. See, other people had to occupy the town of Cambrai and all that, you see. We were coming to the south of Cambrai, and eventually we arrived opposite two villages, Saint-Hilaire and Saint-Vast. The first village of Saint-Hilaire was captured in open country by the battalion, and then the next morning we attacked Saint-Vast. And number two company again, which I was in, was the leading left-hand company of the battalion. And I crawled up a fold in the ground and was able to get into a position behind the village, which was quite a small village and surrounded by a sort of mud wall. And the Germans, finding me firing in their backs, and the rest of the company firing in the front of them, hopped it out as fast as they could. A few prisoners were taken, and they left their breakfast behind on the table.
So you managed to get your entire platoon round by dead ground,
yeah,
to the back of the village. When you were conducting this advance from the Hindenburg line, were you advancing across country or using the roads as the main axes?
Well, first of all, other people went in front of us. We stopped, having captured the Hindenburg line. Other troops must have somehow got in front of us and advanced and occupied the town of Cambrai and other villages, because I think, without looking at the map now, I think St. Vaast is quite a little distance beyond Cambrai. And so we advanced in the ordinary way, just marching up the road, then halted, got into formation and attacked, did two attacks, one on Saint-Hilaire, which number three company captured. Then it got dark, and there wasn't. We were still being shot at from St. Vaast. And then the next morning, the battalion attacked again, and it was number two company's turn.
So it was a company attack upon St. Vaast?
Yes. The rest of the battalion was cooperating on our right.
But did they actually assault the village, or were they just going past?
No, they were attacking the railway line to the right of the village, actually.
Now, when the battalion was advancing in this way, was it strung out along one road, or was it, did it tend to march on parallel routes up tracks on either side?
Well, we marched up one road to start off with, then we spread out into this artillery formation, starting off in big blobs of companies, and then when we came under fire, going into platoons, and then when we got into worse fire, going into section blobs.
How far from the village of St. Vaast was the company start line for the attack?
Well, it seemed quite close. I should think... to get round to the other side of the village was about 1,000 yards.
How long did it take you to actually wriggle round with your platoon in the dead ground to get to the rear of the village?
About an hour.
And how did you do it? Were you actually walking, or were you
on
hands
and knees? We walked
the
roof with, and in places we had to crawl. We had great difficulty in getting over the railway line. I thought they'd see us as we had to go over the embankment. I remember a shell hit the wire that held the signal up, and the signal went bang and whizzed round. I thought, I didn't know what, it frightened me more than anything else. It was the wire had been broken and allowed the arm of the signal to wind round. And we were just as we were crossing, I thought I'd let off some terrific bomb or something.
A booby trap, perhaps.
Booby trap.
Was this outflanking movement of yours pre-planned, or did you just do it on your own initiative because you could see the advantage?
I'd like to say it was my initiative. I mean, I was told to go round the flank, and I saw this, and so I thought, well, I'll start up anyhow.
See how far you
it's rather, yes, I mean, I think it sort of developed as I went along. And
what were the other two or three platoons in the company doing while you were actually executing this manoeuvre?
Oh, they were firing at the village.
They just got into good fire
positions. Fire positions, that's right. And knowing that I was trying to get round.
Did they have any support from heavier weapons?
Well, whether it was the German shell that hit the thing or ours, I don't know. Artillery was being fired by somebody because of this signal.
Field artillery?
Yeah. Nothing very high. Nothing very big.
And did the platoons that had been left in front of the village actually make an assault, or did the Germans decide to evacuate once they realised you were behind them?
No, they assaulted.
They assaulted.
Mm. And when they were just getting into the first house of the village, the Germans were scootling out at the other end. Some of them escaped because I was holding the back of the village, and some went out at the side. Well, they went in every direction.
So
and some,
dispersed.
And a lot of them surrendered. I think there was a company actually in the village itself.
Was there any hand-to-hand fighting before they gave up?
Not with my platoon.
What about the other two platoons? Did you hear about what sort of resistance they made?
Well, they were in amongst them. They winkled them out of the houses.
Had the Germans managed to do much preparation of this village
no.
defence?
They'd made a few loopholes, rather like Waterloo, in the wall around the farms, which we used. I remember looking through one myself. But that's all there. There may have been a few, an odd trench, but nothing very much. They hadn't been there more than a day or so.
So they just got settled in when you bumped into them and pushed them out.
And they'd had a bad day the day before, and they thought it was all quiet, and they thought they'd have breakfast before we attacked.
So you had surprise as well?
But we had surprise on them.
How long do you think the whole attack took to get rid of them, from the time you started getting into position to the time they scuttled out?
Well, I think they were out by 10 o'clock, and I suppose we attacked at about 7:30.
So it was about 2.5 hours to clear a village. Mm-hmm.
I don't say we completely... Well, they all surrendered very quickly. Once it collapsed.
Did you have many casualties on this particular attack?
No, absolutely. But morale, I don't remember a single person being hit, getting round to the back of it.
So manoeuvring proved to be much more safe and secure.
Yes, I mean, I've got a book I'll lend you. It shows that... The use of ground is most important, and I think I had been taught that as a cadet at Sandhurst.
But more in a theoretical than a practical sense.
Mm. Well, we did theory, but I think we could have done more at Sandhurst out of doors than we did.
What about the two platoons that had done the assault? Had they had substantial casualties?
No. It was a most successful thing, as far as I remember. Number 3 company the day before had quite a few casualties, taking Saint-Hilaire. But I think St. Vaast was captured. I think the Germans were getting ready to go, actually. I think they were still... They were the rear guard, of course.
Is that the explanation why St. Vaast was captured with less loss than Saint-Hilaire?
Yeah, I think perhaps it may be better. Mm.
Or is there any other possible?
No, they'd had a long day the day before, and they weren't quite as alert as they might have been, perhaps. Well, they were very much watching the three platoons that were facing them in front. They were being attacked in front, and luckily they weren't looking out at the back. And luckily I had this fold in the ground.
Had you done any training in assaulting and clearing villages and clearing houses and street fighting?
No, we used to go to villages for billeting round Sandhurst. I remember billeting in Eversley and places like that, learning how to billet troops in a village, but and drawing very nice maps and so on. But no.
How did the soldiers actually go about it then, when they burst into a village?
Well, they were just automatically, I think. They just sort of burst open the doors and rushed in. And